Support for WPR comes from the American Society of Landscape Architects Wisconsin Chapter. Dedicated to reimagining the design of outdoor spaces for the well-being of all. Examples at wiasla.com.
It's time to learn something new. Each week during Teach Me What You Know, the Teach Me What You Know segment, we invite an expert to join us to teach us something new. Last week, we learned how to sort through the walls of wine at a liquor store and pick out something good, but not too expensive.
This week, we're learning how to respond to medical emergencies. You never know what kind of situation you might need to be prepared for. And the president of Wisconsin's EMS Association joins us now to share some advice on what you can do.
Joshua Kwalke, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
What is the first thing that we should do when we see someone that needs medical attention?
First thing and most important thing is to make sure 911's been called. So you want to either call 911 yourself or instruct somebody to call 911.
What information is important to communicate when we get on the line with 911?
The really important thing is to, first of all, tell them where you are, because they need to know where to send emergency services to. And the next most important thing is to let them know what's going on. So if somebody's having a medical emergency or if there's a fire or police are needed, just really telling them what the situation is.
Mm-hmm. As an emergency medical responder, what are the most common calls that you respond to?
As far as the ambulance, EMS, we respond, I would say the most common would be falls in the home. When people fall down and basically need assistance.
Mm. Say we are a first responder ourselves, how should we help someone when they fall down?
The first thing you want to do is see what their orientation is. So are they still talking to you and do they remember everything that happened? It becomes really concerning when they have an injury, for example, a hip fracture, so they're having some hip pain, or if they've hit their head and they don't know, remember what happened, those kinds of things are really concerning. So it's important to call an ambulance if that's the case. If they don't have any real injuries, they're, no head injury, no back or neck pain, certainly you can help them up and get them back into a chair.
Mm-hmm. What are some signs that maybe we should or should not move them or get them in a more comfortable position?
If they have head pain, neck pain, back pain, all of those things become very concerning to us as emergency responders. So we want to make sure that those people just stay in the position that they're in until we get there and do our assessments. So you don't want to move them or help them up, even though it might seem like the right thing to do.
Talk about preventative measures just a bit. What kinds of things can we do in the home to prevent falls?
Like I said, falls in the home are the most common thing that we respond to, and a lot of times the falls are because somebody has an extension cord or the rugs that we all like to have in our homes that are pretty and decorative, but they're in the middle of the floor and people trip over them. So those things, you really need to be careful about where you place them and making sure they're secured to the floor so that they don't become a trip hazard.
So let's say a friend or loved one has fallen down and hit their head. How do I know whether or not they're suffering from a concussion?
If they have confusion, they're repeating questions, just not acting right, maybe they had a loss of consciousness, so they didn't respond to you for a few seconds to a couple minutes, all of those things would indicate to us that there's a more severe problem and you probably need emergency medical services.
And there are several situations we might respond to where someone's life might be in danger, another one involving choking. What should we do when we encounter someone who's been choking after, of course, we've called 911?
For choking, we want to do the Heimlich maneuver. So to do the Heimlich maneuver properly, what you're going to do is you're going to place your fist just above the belly button on the person's abdomen. You're going to stand behind them and just wrap your arms right around them. And like I said, put your fist just above their belly button. Put your other hand over top of it, and you're going to squeeze inward and upward as hard as you can because you want to push the belly up against the diaphragm and the lungs to try to push that object out of their airway. So you need to do it really hard and really fast until they either go unconscious or they start breathing.
I imagine that that is difficult to do, especially if you lack a certain amount of upper body strength. Do you have any advice for doing the most effective Heimlich maneuver possible?
The best thing, like I said, if you need to go inward and upward, so you might have to have them get down on their knees or something. If you're shorter than they are, or if you're doing it on a child, you might have to get down to their level. But that's really going to be the best thing, is just getting those inward and upward thrusts as hard as you can.
Is it possible to pull too hard or to, you know, create injury in some way?
No, you need to do it. Otherwise, they're going to die from not having oxygen. So it needs to get done hard and fast.
Talk a little bit about the physiology, I guess, of that. Why does it work?
Like I said, the diaphragm pushes against the lungs, and basically you're squeezing the abdomen, which pushes against the diaphragm. So it's squeezing, even when you breathe all the way out, your lungs still have some air in them. So it pushes that air against the object and pushes it up out of the airway.
What should we do if the victim does go unconscious?
At that point, you need to lower them to the floor as gently as possible. So you, when you're doing this, you also want to make sure that you have a good grip on them and lower them down to the floor onto their back, and then you just start chest compressions. You can look in the airway to see if you see anything, and if you do see something, pull it out. But otherwise, you just start doing chest compressions right in the middle of their chest on their sternum. You're pushing down about 2 inches as hard as you can, and trying to push again the air out of the lungs and push that object out.
So talk a little bit about why those specifications, two inches up or 2 inches down as you're pressing and in the middle of the sternum, what's happening there?
Again, you're pressing on the lungs. That's also the same maneuver that you're going to do for CPR. So if somebody's heart has stopped, you're going to do that exact same thing. So this is kind of covering both bases. If somebody who isn't able to breathe because their airway is obstructed, their heart is in danger too because that's not getting oxygen. So this is kind of covering both bases in that we're trying to still get that object out, but we're also doing chest compressions to help circulate blood in case the heart stops.
There's some discussion over whether or not you should actually give breaths as well as cardio compressions. Should we be trying to do rescue breathing, and where does the confusion lie in that issue?
There's different standards out there. Certainly, if you're not comfortable doing rescue breathing, the studies have found that it's very ineffective with people that don't do it on a regular basis. So if you're not comfortable with it, chest compressions are totally acceptable until the first responders, EMTs, or paramedics get there. And then they can start doing their rescue breathing with a bag valve mask. But, you know, certainly you can, if you're not comfortable or not able to do rescue breathing, you can just do chest compressions.
Now, would this be the same process that we would use for a victim who's experiencing cardiac arrest, for example?
It would be, yep. You're right in the middle of the sternum again, right in the middle of the chest. They say the nipple line, so, you know, right in the center of the chest, and you're just pushing down and trying to do 100 compressions a minute, so they're actually pretty fast.
Hmm. Whether, I guess, another emergency that people may experience is a stroke. How can we recognize a stroke when it happens?
A stroke, normally the person has slurred speech. They may be confused, not know what's going on. And a lot of times one side or the other side, either left or right side of their body, isn't working. So they'd have paralysis on one side or the other side of their body. And when that happens, it's really, really important to call 911 immediately, because a lot of times those people can be helped if they get to the hospital in a very quick or very short amount of time. So it becomes really important to make sure that 911's been called, and then write down what time the symptoms actually started, because that becomes important later on with treatment.
And in this very cold winter, we've also heard of some cases where, you know, hypothermia is an issue. How should we respond to that?
Important things with hypothermia is just getting the person into a warm area if you can. Getting any wet clothing off, because wet clothing will make you get colder faster. As far as rewarming an area that may have frostbite, you don't want to use real hot water. So very, very, very lukewarm water, and just warm the area up slowly.
What about if I'm out ice fishing in the middle of a lake and I don't have quick access to a warm environment or even warm water? What options do I have?
Again, if your clothing is wet, getting that off and getting blankets or, you know, other people's coats perhaps, or things like that, it just becomes really important to get somebody to a warmer environment and starting the rewarming process.
You know, in these scenarios, I guess in a way it's easy to talk about it in the hypothetical, but in the moment, as we're faced with a situation, it can incite maybe a lot of panic and nervousness. What advice do you have for keeping cool in an emergency?
The best thing to do is remember to breathe. Looking around, making sure you're seeing everything around you, because it's really easy to get that tunnel vision, and just make sure you're breathing. And if you need to, count a little bit to make sure that your breaths are going in and out, and just keep looking around and just try to remain calm and think calm thoughts.
Any other advice for how to save a life?
Like I said before, the very most important thing is to always make sure 911's been called.
That's great advice. Thank you so much, Joshua, for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We've been speaking with Joshua Kowalki, president of Wisconsin EMS Association. He's joined us for this week's segment of Teach Me What You Know to talk us through how we can handle emergency situations. This week, going through instances like choking, home falls, CPR, and the Heimlich maneuver.
And maybe you have an idea for a segment to teach you what we know or what one of our guests knows. We are always looking for ideas. You can post on the Central Time Facebook page. You could also send your ideas to talk@wpr.org.